The Supreme Court issued a ruling on health care reform yesterday, and the law widely known as Obamacare survived the challenge. And it's roundup time now. We've rounded up a whole bunch of experts, elected officials, and hopefully you to give some reaction and analysis. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7 minutes after 7 on Friday, June 29th. We have Senator Ron Johnson and Congressman Ron Kind scheduled for later in the hour, and we have experts on the court on healthcare politics and on healthcare policy coming up in our first half. And you can join the show with your reaction at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email talk at WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our first guest is Jolly Emery, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, thanks for joining us. First of all, let me jump in with one of the surprises here. Usually the swing vote on the court is Justice Kennedy, you know, four liberals, roughly four conservatives usually. And then Kennedy is the swing vote. This time he wasn't. It was Justice Roberts. How surprising is that to you?
To me personally, I was surprised. I had listened to oral argument on C-SPAN again Wednesday. They were playing it over again. And I guess this is hindsight, but I was listening to Roberts and the questions he was asking and some of the comments that he made, and I thought, oh, he's sounding quite measured considering this particular case. And Hemi's kind of questioning where he might come out on, well, at least the tax part, but I wasn't even sure that they were going to consider that seriously. So, yes, very surprised, like many other people.
And you just mentioned the tax part. A lot of people thought this ruling was going to hang on the Commerce Clause.
Yeah.
And the tax was kind of a sideshow. Nobody wanted to call the individual mandate, that's what we're talking about here, a tax, except that's what the Supreme Court did.
Yes. Yes. Well, they called it a tax, but at one point they also refer to it as a payment. So that's one of the interesting and I think very clever parts of the opinion where he constructed it. So at one point it is referred to as a payment. That's how Congress wanted to refer to it. That's how the administration would obviously prefer to refer to it. And then it shifts to a tax in terms of looking at its constitutionality.
And why is that important? I mean, it sounds like maybe a fine point of semantics if you don't dig too deep into it. Why is that meaningful?
Well, it's meaningful in one respect because one of the issues is whether or not this case is what they call ripe, whether or not the court could actually hear the case. And that hinged on the Anti-Injunction Act. And the Anti-Injunction Act basically bars any sort of litigation until a taxpayer has actually had to pay a tax and then sues, claiming that whatever this piece of legislation is that requires the tax is invalid and the courts can get involved. And so what the court had to address first was whether or not the Anti-Injunction Act did bar the case from being heard, and Roberts said no, it didn't, because with respect to how the Affordable Care Act is written, this is not a tax. But then shifts it to saying, but with respect to Congress's power to enact this legislation, it does fall under the tax and spending power.
Rob Ferret filling in for Joy Cardine today. We're getting a bunch of reactions to the Supreme Court ruling on health care reform, on Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. You can join in at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. I'd like to hear your opinions, whether you're happy or upset about the ruling, what you think is next for health care. 800-642-1234. Right now talking to political scientist Jolly Emery. She keeps track of Supreme Court issues, among other things. Another thing that struck me as interesting, Professor Emery, is the dissent, written, I think, by Justice Kennedy. If they had won, this would have scrapped the whole thing. They would have ruled the individual mandate unconstitutional and said that means that the whole rest of the bill is gone. Did that strike you, too?
Right, it did. And in fact, they went even further because they said that, okay, this is a difficult thing to consider with regard to Congress's power because they did acknowledge in dissent that there have been some precedents, referring back to the majority opinion and then to Ginsburg's concurrence, where we have said at different points in time that Congress can use the commerce power for certain things. And this tax and spending power is one that's been a little bit less, well, obviously less used than the commerce power, but they said that, you know, things get a little complicated here. However, putting that aside, the fact of the matter is that if you look at the 10th Amendment, then this entire act is a problem, because what the federal government is doing basically is, according to the dissenters, is saying that states are compelled to function as administrators for federal programs. And in their mind, that's a 10th Amendment or a federalism violation. So if it doesn't violate the 10th Amendment, the rest of it just doesn't matter.
The majority did make one significant change in the law about essentially punishing states that don't play along by taking away all their Medicaid funding. They said you can't do that.
That's right. That's right. With respect to what's considered the Medicaid expansion part of the bill, they said that using a stick is unconstitutional. However, you can offer an incentive. So you cannot take away existing funds, but you can offer, incentives if states comply. The incentive would be getting the additional Medicaid funds.
One last question. Chief Justice Roberts, again, wrote the opinion. He's a key figure here. Is this a case where he's making a genuine effort to kind of walk softly when it comes to overriding what Congress has done?
Oh, my gosh. I think that has been huge speculation with respect to, or the most interesting part, I think, for many people with respect to this opinion, because obviously Roberts was a surprise, and then what this means with respect to his role as Chief Justice. And it could be. I mean, a well-crafted opinion, thinking about all these different considerations. And so that could be his goal here, to walk softly, yes.
Thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. That was Jolly Emery, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Whitewater. We're rounding up a whole bunch of perspectives and reactions to yesterday's Supreme Court ruling on health care. You can join the show at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, email talk@WPR.org. Our first caller will be Jim in Madison. Hi, Jim. What's your reaction?
Well, what I'd like to share with you is Ron Johnson's reaction, who's a Republican U.S. Senator representing us in Wisconsin, and he's also a Tea Party favorite. And he has stated that employers should be able to drop people from their health plan when they get cancer, because he believes in individual freedom and small government. If we support his leadership, many people with cancer will die due to lack of preventive care and expensive treatment.
Thanks for the call, Jim. And we will hear from Senator Johnson later in the hour. We'll focus a little more directly on the Supreme Court ruling, though, when we talk to him. You can join in with your reactions to yesterday's ruling at 800-642-1234. Next up, Ed Miller, Professor of Political Science at UW-Stevens Point. Professor Miller, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Now, let's look at some of the political fallout from this first. Already seeing talk from Republicans saying, hey, this is going to be a big campaign issue in the presidential race. This is going to modify swing voters in swing states. It's going to lead them to vote for Mitt Romney. Do you think this is going to be a big issue in that race?
No. It'll be an issue. But I think that if this is the emphasis, it would be in the wrong direction for Republicans to use. And there are two reasons for this. One reason has to do with Romney. Mitt Romney had created the exact same plan in Massachusetts. So even though he'll make a federalism issue that each state should decide for themselves, in effect, his plan was virtually identical to that of the federal plan. And so, therefore, it's difficult to oppose it. Second is the idea that the main issue probably is the economy. And anything, whether it's immigration or the health care, taking the direction off the economy, I think it would be a bad strategy for the Republicans.
Well, and Mitt Romney has said that if he is president and he gets a Republican majority in the Senate, he will try to repeal the whole thing. Do you think they can make that happen? They probably won't have a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, even if they get it. Is Obamacare in danger in that scenario?
I don't believe so, because exactly what you said. One is they're not going to have 60 votes in the Senate, for one. For two, He had indicated that he supported many of the measures in the plan. And so when, if he supports many of the measures in the plan, he's got to come up with some kind of financing of the plan. And he's indicated no financing, and he's not interested in any tax increases. So I don't know how he's going to do this. I don't know how he's going to require insurance companies, for example, to cover everybody with pre-existing conditions if their base is not broadened, which is what this law does.
Now, some recent polls have suggested, and they have for a while, that Americans are not super nuts about this plan, at least as they see it so far. Are there things that President Obama and Democrats need to do to either tweak the plan to make it more appealing or to make the case still that it's worth having?
Right, exactly. I think they need to make the case for it. In effect, the public opinion has been bifurcated, that even though when you asked about the plan, do you like the plan, people, majority say no. But if you asked about all the provisions in the plan, overwhelmingly people are in favor of them. And so it's pretty, people simply do not understand the plan. And when people say, for example, I saw the governor had said that it's going to increase people's health care costs and all this. In fact, it'll do just the opposite, because what we have, we'll have is, if we can cover most people, and everybody won't be covered under this plan, but most people would be covered, that you have far less what's known as cost shifting. And so when people go into the emergency room, they will have at least Medicaid in many states and other kinds of coverage and individual, if they get their individual policies. And if they do it now and they go in, they don't have a policy, that is then shift their cost to shift. Shift it to those who actually have health insurance. And so those who have health insurance don't have to now foot the bill for the others. And that was the original reason that the individual mandate was supported by a conservative organization, that's the Heritage Foundation, because they argue that it's individual responsibility, and one individual shouldn't have to take the responsibility for someone else. That was the original reason where the individual mandate came from.
And you had predicted earlier this week, when you talked to producer Bill Martins, that the Supreme Court would uphold Obamacare. Why did you make that prediction? Anything surprise you about the ruling as it transpired?
Right. No, I thought they would uphold it. It's such a significant element. I thought that the prestige of the Supreme Court was in balance with regard to some of their previous decisions that have now been looked at pretty negatively. And so I thought that Roberts in particular was going to favor the law, and that would throw it. I actually thought Kennedy was going to be on the other side. So I thought the decision rather than 5-4 was going to be 6-3. I am a little, what I was surprised about is the interpretation of the Commerce Clause, where they said the Commerce Clause did not apply. Well, there's a whole bunch of precedents in the Supreme Court precedents which would suggest that the Commerce Clause does apply. Even when you're not engaged in commerce, one of the most clear one was a case that dealt with wheat, and this farmer was growing wheat for himself. And the question is, can the federal government regulate his wheat growing, how much he grows, if he's not selling the wheat in commerce? And they argued that he could. And that particular case acts as precedent for a whole stream of cases. Well, Roberts in the decision sort of neglects that. He just glosses over that. He never actually looks at that. The taxes is an interesting one as well, because what he did was, in the decision, he said it was a tax, but it wasn't a tax. He basically, because if he said it's a tax, then it can't be brought into someone has levied this tax. So he said basically it comes under the taxing power, but it's not a tax. And as not a tax, it is not under what's called the Anti-Injunctive Act, which would require somebody to have to pay this tax.
Thanks to political science professor Ed Miller of UW-Stevens Point. We're rounding up reactions to the healthcare ruling from the Supreme Court yesterday. Quick look at the weather. Hot and sunny today. Highs in the 80s and low 90s. Tonight, mostly clear. Chance of rain in the far south. Lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, hot and sunny. Highs in the 80s and low 90s. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret filling in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are rounding up reactions to the health care reform ruling from the Supreme Court yesterday, including yours maybe at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org. Joining me next is Tom Oliver. He's a professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison, director of the UW's Master of Public Health program. He joins us by phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what does this mean for the unfolding of this health care reform law now?
Well, I think it means I can finally agree with Winston Churchill that Americans can be counted on to do the right thing after exhausting all the alternatives. But I believe that what we have here is a really huge turning point and an opportunity to take a patchwork quilt of health insurance that we've built that confers different coverage on or no coverage at all on different groups in our population, depending on, you know, where they live, who they work for, what they do for a living, and what their family composition is, and tries to make a more seamless quilt by filling in some of the holes and repairing some of the frayed edges that we've seen over the last couple of decades.
One change that the Supreme Court made was some of the Medicaid provisions. They took out, as we were talking about earlier, the stick. The federal government can't punish states for non-participation by yanking all their Medicaid funding. Is this going to have an impact on how care gets provided, how coverage gets provided to some people?
It could, potentially, but in order to do that, states and their political leadership would have to ignore the very powerful carrot that basically outweighs greatly the stick of requiring states to follow exactly the prescribed eligibility in the Medicaid programs. The reason is the federal government is going to pay 100% of the bill for the first few years, and even at the end of the process, we'll still be paying 90 cents out of every dollar for the expanded eligibility. So, you know, political leaders in the states to ignore that money would be to thumb their noses at tens of thousands of individuals without health insurance in their own states. And I think that will come to be regarded as unacceptable and unwise politically.
Rob Ferret filling in for Joy Cardine today, getting a variety of reactions to yesterday's Supreme Court health care ruling. Our guest right now is Tom Oliver. He's a public health expert at the UW-Madison. Going to take your calls throughout the hour, mixed in amongst our guests, 800-642-1234. What did you think of the ruling? Were you excited and dancing or dejected? And looking forward maybe to a chance to turn it around in the presidential election? 800-642-1234. 1234 or email talk@wpr.org. Let's look at the road ahead now, Tom Oliver. This is a law that's being phased in over time. What haven't we seen in place so far?
Well, there are many, many hidden provisions that are not part of the heated rhetoric around the law. And there's enormous amount of effort that is well underway in the government, but also especially in the private sector, to improve the quality of health care for all Americans by building better systems of care, providing better information to inform clinical decision-making, and starting to change the way we pay for care so that more is not necessarily always better and not better paid. Taking care of patients from early on in their life and also as their health conditions deteriorate is really critical here to continue to do well economically if you're a healthcare system. And I think the other thing that we have to do a lot of is to really advertise to Americans the opportunities here to get health insurance if they don't have it, either through the public insurance programs or, more importantly, through private insurance opportunities through employers or the health insurance exchanges that now need to be built and set up across the states.
I want to take a call while you're with us on the line, Tom Oliver. John in Waukesha has a question. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I just had a question. I've been a believer that the insurance companies have basically been operating under a conflict of interest in terms of profiting from people being sick. And I'm wondering what this does to perhaps alleviate that situation or make that better. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, John. Tom Oliver?
Yeah, well, one way of reading the Supreme Court decision is that John Roberts played the great statesman in giving America a chance to join the rest of the advanced industrial world and have a civilized healthcare system that provides access to care for all Americans, or at least the chance to get there with a lot of hard work. The other thing, way to read it, is that he came in as the champion of big business, which for all the libertarian preaching that we hear from Republicans, big business is their biggest constituency, and among big business are private insurance companies, especially for-profit ones, and the drug industry, and a lot of large hospital and nursing home chains. So this is great news for them because they're going to get tens of millions of new customers. But the price that they pay is that they, just as individuals and state and federal government, are going to have both rights and responsibilities now. And the responsibilities will be to begin to tailor their programs by making sure that they have to offer insurance to people. They can't deny people based on their pre-existing conditions. They have to control the premiums that are available. They will be have their premium increases reviewed by the government for excessive price increases. And also they're going to have to offer some preventive services that are not typically covered without user charges, without cost sharing by individuals. So I think this will create much stronger, more level playing field for competition. And to do well, you're going to have to provide more efficiency and more effectiveness along with good marketing and picking healthy customers.
Thanks to Tom Oliver, professor in the Department of Public Health Sciences at UW-Madison. Just one of the guests we have this hour talking about yesterday's Supreme Court ruling on health care. Senator Ron Johnson, Congressman Ron Kind coming up, and we'll have some more time open for your calls, 800-642-1234. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in today for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The news is coming up next. Rob Ferret filling in for Joy Cardine this week here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're rounding up reactions to yesterday's Supreme Court ruling on health care, the Affordable Care Act, widely known as Obamacare. We'll get to your calls in a little bit at 800-642-1234. Right now, we have U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin on the line. Senator Johnson, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Rob. How are you doing?
Great. Well, first of all, your reaction to yesterday's ruling.
Well, obviously, I'm not pleased. But let's face it, I think the end result, if you want to kind of cut through all the clutter, is what happened is the Supreme Court rewrote the health care law and basically said that as much as President Obama and the Democrats said it was not a tax, in fact, the penalty was a tax. And, you know, from my standpoint, when you rewrite laws from the bench, that's not my definition of judicial restraint. But that's where we're at. I definitely recognize the reality of the situation. So what Justice Roberts basically did is he's thrown this back into the political realm, back in the hands of Congress. And so, you know, I believe it's our task now to describe to the American people, you know, paint a picture basically of what our health care system is going to look like and what our budget is going to look like if this law gets implemented. And on both fronts, I think you're looking at a real disaster.
I'm going to go way out on a limb and guess that you're hoping for a Republican president next year and a Republican Senate majority. If you get that, are you going to try to scrap the whole health care law?
Absolutely, and you're not going out that far on a limb. It is the only way we're going to be able to overturn this health care law. And Rob, I think the easiest way to really describe what the health care law really does is it will increase the demand for health care by adding 20 to 30 million people basically onto Medicaid rolls, and it will decrease the supply by reducing funding. I mean, that's, you know, half of the pay-fors of the first 6 years, you know, 10 years worth of funding, but 6 years worth of benefits. Half of the pay-for was really reduction in reimbursements to people that provide Medicare and Medicaid. And already you have Medicaid providers, or about 60% of providers in some areas are the only people that will actually see Medicaid patients. That will reduce even further because as government continues to bankrupt itself, it's going to have less capability of paying for all this health care that's taken upon itself. And so it's going to first try and reduce reimbursement to providers, well, more and more providers will drop out or they'll go bankrupt, and we will reduce the supply as we've increased the demand for it. That's a market disaster.
Now, speaking of efforts to switch the White House and Senate to Republican control, is this an issue that's going to affect people in swing states, maybe even here in Wisconsin?
You know, I think this is obviously a national race. This is a national issue because President Obama chose to nationalize our health care system. And I think that's just the wrong direction. You know, from my standpoint, what Governor Romney's talking about is that you want to put states back in control. And really, what the people you really want to put in control of health care are individuals. And so the solution to our health care system, in terms of solving the problems it does have, is putting more power in the hands of individuals. And that means bringing the free market disciplines back into healthcare, allowing individuals to purchase healthcare across state lines, really reforming our tort system. Now, Rob, I've seen recent reports that put the cost of defensive medicine as high as $750 billion a year. That's almost a quarter of what we spend on healthcare. If we can rein in, you know, the cost of junk lawsuits and the resulting cost of defensive medicine, that's one way you actually can bend the cost curve down in healthcare, which, by the way, the healthcare law did not bend the cost curve down at all.
One last question. Suppose you have a Republican Senate, a Republican president, but not a filibuster-proof majority. Do you see a situation where you could work with Democrats to avoid the filibuster to change the laws that currently exists to make it more to your liking?
Well, I mean, bottom line is, you know, the other side's not going away. And in terms of saving things like Social Security and Medicare, we're going to have to work with the other side. And I'm happy to work with anybody that's willing to acknowledge the problem and work with me in good faith to solve it. But in particular, I mean, one thing that this health care ruling did is because you turned it in from a penalty to a tax, you'll be able to remove that mandate and really dismantle and stop the implementation of the majority of the Obamacare law through reconciliation process, which only requires 51 votes. So, I mean, we really, you know, if Republicans gain a majority in the Senate and we win the presidency, we should be able to stop the implementation of Obamacare in its tracks.
Senator Johnson, thanks for joining us this morning.
Have a great day.
You too. Coming up in just a couple minutes, Representative Ron Kind. We'll get a couple of your responses now at 800-642-1234. Rob Ferret here for Joy Cardine, talking to a bunch of different people, including you, about yesterday's Supreme Court ruling. Joy in Fountain City joins us now. Hi, Joy.
Hi.
Your thoughts?
Well, I'm against the Obamacare thing. Primarily, I guess I'm against it because, in my case, it does not cover the kind of health care that I choose to take on for myself. So for that, I'm paying for a benefit that I'm going to not get any benefit for. I don't think the federal government has any right to determine how you spend your post-tax dollars. And this idea that the federal government will pay for 100% of anything is kind of ludicrous. It's not like they are a magic entity in the sky that drops money down on us. We are the ones who pay for everything the federal government pays for. So ultimately, that comes out of our pockets, too.
Thanks for sharing your reaction, Joy. Now, Edric, is it, in Racine? Am I saying that right?
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Go ahead.
Your response to the health care ruling.
You know, I'm glad it passed because I think that everybody does need health care, be it whoever. And I think another thing, it's just like almost like when cell phones first came out. I'm talking on a cell phone. Everything was very expensive. You didn't have that many carriers, but I'm quite sure after a certain amount of time, you know, just like with this health care, after this thing goes through, you're going to start saying, you know, true enough, you might lose some company, but then once they bring it in, because everything needs to be tweaked. I'm not saying it's the best, but it's the beginning, and that's what people don't understand. We got to start somewhere because it's been so many years where people that really need health care, they don't have it, and this is the one step because a lot of companies, like say like a big company like Walmart, they get around these health care laws by not having full-time employees and stuff like that. Some of those people need health care. And so I think everybody needs it. I think it's the right,
gotcha.
You know, not a story.
You're kind of fading out there, Edric, but thank you very much for the call. You and Joy both. And now our next guest, Representative Ron Kind from Wisconsin. Congressman Kind, good morning.
Good morning, Rod.
So first of all, your reaction to the ruling yesterday.
Well, Rob, my first reaction was emotional. I was very happy for this 3-year-old little boy who I had a chance to meet in western Wisconsin by the name of Henry, whose mother informed me that before he was even born, he suffered a seizure in her womb, and therefore the first breath he took in his life they were informed that he was uninsurable because he had a pre-existing condition. So that family was depleting their entire life savings to make sure that little Henry was getting the health care that he needed at the time. And with the passage of this bill, that changed for Henry and that family and for 39,000 other children with pre-existing conditions in western Wisconsin overnight. And as a nation, we were better than that, and we could do better. And I'm not one to subscribe to the fact that this is a perfect bill. It's not. But it gives us the tools to move forward on reforming a healthcare system that's in desperate need of reform, to continue building health information technologies and electronic medical records to increase the efficiency of care, reduce medical errors, and start collecting data so we know what works and what doesn't work in the healthcare system. Changing the way healthcare is delivered so it is more integrated, coordinated, patient-centered. And ultimately, we need to change the way we pay for healthcare so it's based on the value or the outcome of care and not the volume of care that's given. That's really bankrupting us and driving up a cost. And we've got models of care in Wisconsin with our providers that are showing us exactly how this can be done, some of the best in the world. And we need to be taking that model nationwide in order to bring healthcare costs down for everyone.
We just heard from Senator Johnson that he's hoping for a strong enough Republican majority in the Senate and, of course, a Republican president to repeal the law or, failing that, stop implementation. Are you worried that this can still be stopped?
Well, I don't, because the Supreme Court, in the system of checks and balances that we have, has weighed in and found that it is constitutional. And for the sake of certainty, I would hope that people like Senator Johnson and others who have been critical about it will start working with the tools that are in this law and find out what works and what doesn't. And then we all need to have the ability to make adjustments along the way. And we're going to have to do that. This is not the end-all, be-all on health care reform. This merely allows us the opportunity to start changing things to drive down costs, to extend coverage, to improve the quality of care. And I've heard others who say, you know, all we need is Med-Mal reform around the country, and a lot of this will be fixed. Well, Wisconsin already has Med-Mal caps in place. 37 states have already done that. So unless these 13 states out there are the ones who are the real cost drivers, I fail to see the logic in that argument, or the idea that consumers need to be driving all these decisions. And I believe that we need more skin in the game as consumers of healthcare. There's no question about it. But I'm a reasonably intelligent person. When I go into the doctor's office, I'm not going to know if I need an MRI or a CT scan or some other test or procedure. I didn't go to medical school. And that's why we need to work with the healthcare system, the providers, to change the way they're delivering it so it is more integrated and coordinated, and then change the incentives in the system so we're paying for outcomes and value. Because studies show now that we're spending one out of every three healthcare dollars in our healthcare system on stuff that doesn't work. It doesn't improve patient care. That's $800 billion a year we're spending that we're not getting a good bang for the buck for. And so I think we need to get past the political rhetoric and start coming together and finding some common sense solutions. And the irony is that when you talk about the specific provisions of the Affordable Care Act, it's widely supported and it makes sense. And these are a lot of items that Republicans were very supportive about in the past. But suddenly, because the president has embraced this, it's been such a hot political issue. And if it continues to be one, that uncertainty is going to continue in the future. And that's not going to be good for consumers, for businesses, or the type of economic growth and job creation we need today.
Just briefly, you mentioned earlier that you would be willing to make some changes. This isn't the be-all and end-all. Are there one or two changes you could see making that you think you and the fellow Democrats and Republicans could agree on?
Well, we already did earlier this year, Rob. The CLEAR Act, this would establish a long-term health insurance program under the Affordable Care Act. When the administration got it, and then I was raising these concerns initially, saying we should not do this because it's not financially sustainable. But when the administration got it, they reached the same conclusion. It says, you know, we can't sustain this based on the finances and the expenses that we're facing. So that was repealed. That was taken out of the bill. And the president signed that into law. You know, we had a medical device tax repeal that just came up that I supported because I think there are better pay-fors in order to pay for this health care bill, which we had to do, than taxing our medical device manufacturers based on the sales, which would, I think, jeopardize a lot of the smaller manufacturers out there. And that's the point, Rob, is that we're going to have to keep an open mind, work together, make adjustments as we learn more, as we go forward with this health care reform, what is working and what isn't. And this is going to be an ongoing project. But also, too many of my Republican colleagues are trying to scare the American people that this is going to drive up deficits. But the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, they're our referee in anything we do, says with passage of this bill, it's going to reduce the budget deficit by $1.2 trillion over the next 20 years. We do that through spending reductions in the healthcare system and some additional revenue. And that's what you need to do to pay for things as you go along. Unlike, again, many of my Republican colleagues who supported two wars, two huge tax cuts, a huge expansion of healthcare spending when they passed that prescription drug bill back in 2004, and also gave huge subsidies to private insurance companies to bribe them into offering Medicare Advantage plans. None of that was paid for. And now they're walking around scratching their head wondering why we're facing huge budget deficits today.
Congressman Kine, thanks a lot for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Rob. My pleasure.
Congressman Ron Kine from Wisconsin, the last of our scheduled guests to react to yesterday's health care reform ruling from the Supreme Court. We'll hear from you coming up after the break at 800-642-1234, email talk@WPR.org. You can carry on the conversation on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page as well. Today, hot and sunny, a few clouds in the south with a slight chance of rain, highs in the 80s and low 90s, cooler near Lake Michigan. Tonight, mostly clear, a chance of rain in the far south, lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, hot and sunny, a slight chance of rain in the south and west, highs in the 80s and low 90s. It'll stay hot beyond that. Right now, Milwaukee 72, Green Bay 72, Appleton 74, Wausau 65 degrees, Superior 71, Madison 68, Stevens Point 69. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine this week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 8, it's the Week in Review. Two takes on the top issues facing the state, the nation, and the world this week. We'll talk more about health care reform then, of course, about contempt charges against Attorney General Eric Holder, and other issues. This hour, we are reacting to yesterday's Supreme Court ruling on Obamacare, on the Affordable Care Act. It's your turn now at 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org. What do you think about the ruling, and what are you thinking about moving forward? Isaac will start us off in Green Bay. Hi, Isaac.
Hi, Rob. My reaction to the health care law is that it has a lot of great ideas, but I disagree with it very strongly on a very basic issue, the power of the federal government to enact a law like that. The Commerce Clause has been scaled back very recently in the United States versus Lopez in 1995, and Justice Roberts' opinion on the tax status of the bill is frankly incoherent. I'm not going to pretend like I've read the whole opinion, but I haven't heard anyone who's been able to make sense of his interpreting the law both as a tax and then not as a tax for purposes of the anti-injunction clause. That's just it doesn't make sense to me.
And Isaac, would you prefer to see solutions at the state levels?
Absolutely. I think solutions at the state level give individual people and smaller communities a better chance to make their own solutions to the health care law instead of trying to make a large bill that crams a shoe on foot that it quite frankly doesn't fit. And that's how I feel with this national health care law.
And would you support an individual mandate at a state level, like in Massachusetts, as long as it's not a federal mandate?
Yes, I would. I think the states have the power to do that, and I think it gives individuals in the states more control over what they want and what they don't want in their state.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call, Isaac. Appreciate it. Move on now to Beth in Hudson. Hi there, Beth.
Hello.
What are your thoughts? What's your reaction to yesterday's Supreme Court ruling?
I was grateful for the ruling. I want to respectfully disagree with Mr. Johnson when he said that the ruling or the Obamacare will increase the demand on healthcare dollars. My husband and I both work in healthcare, and when people get sick and get injured, whether they have insurance or not, and what these folks end up doing is going to the emergency room and getting really expensive care instead of going to an office visit where it's much more reasonable for minor injuries and minor illnesses. So we're paying either way, and the way it is currently, we're paying much more because uninsured people are getting their healthcare at the ER.
And Beth, you're not worried that this is kind of an overreach of federal power, as our previous caller suggested?
You know, if you have a bigger pool if it's federally mandated, and it affects everybody when people don't have their insurance, and it's for the betterment of the health of our entire population, and it works elsewhere.
Thanks a lot for the call, Beth. And I really like the phrase, I respectfully disagree. Love to hear that in our discussions here on the Ideas Network. Here's an email from Ken in De Pere. My response to the medical care bill is that I wish it would be called the medical insurance bill. The bill is about insurance, not about controlling or providing affordable medical cost. Some way there will be action on medical cost, but Ken writes, this isn't it. Thanks for the email, Ken. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Or email talk@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret, filling in for Joy Cardine. We are reacting to yesterday's Supreme Court healthcare ruling. And our next reaction comes from Carrie in Augusta. Hi there, Carrie.
Hi, good morning. I am so pleased that this legislation was upheld. In my own personal life, my 24-year-old son, finally, we were able to let him have coverage as he was seeking his first job that had healthcare. And that was such peace of mind for me. And as a woman, last fall, when I had a routine physical and a mammogram, and I had to fight with an insurance company for a mammogram, I was able to use this legislation to uphold that, too. So I am glad, and I'm also really grateful because it's a selfless thing to do, and I'm tired of the selfishness of the GOP.
Thanks for the call, Carrie. We'll go now to Jean in Eau Claire. Hi there, Jean.
Well, hello. I think it's a great day in our country. I think we needed consumer protection from day one. I listen to lots of conversations, hear a lot of people who purchase health insurance coverage who are dropped from their policies the minute that they need to utilize it with a new diagnosis. That was happening in our country. Also, people paying for coverage that when the time came, I'm sorry, that's not offered in our in our policy, even though people were sold with that. I think it's just wonderful that we finally have some consumer protection, for people that purchase health insurance. In addition, I think it's fantastic, that our president stepped up and our representative stepped up to fight for the consumer and the people, instead of worrying about the top half, the top 1% of our country. I am so excited. I'm sure you can tell. I know of people personally who have been diagnosed with cancer, and they were going to be knocked off their policy. And if it wasn't for the president stepping up, they would have lost their coverage, and it would have been thousands of dollars, and they would have lost their homes.
Gotcha. Thanks, Gene. I want to get one more caller in before we wrap up here. Time for a quick call from Lynn in DeSoto. Hi, Lynn.
Good morning. We cheered yay for Obama. I have visitors from Tennessee and Connecticut with us, and we all felt the same way. I don't think the people that are covered by state and federal employees realize how much we're paying out of pocket. My family has chronic problems, and we're on the HIRSP. We couldn't get coverage anywhere else, and we're paying big bucks out of pocket. We're paying for the uninsured, whether we know it or not. That's why our bills are so high, and what we're paying out to cover the people that can't afford regular insurance. Yay, Obama.
Thanks for the call, Lynn. Other people online, Pat in Three Lakes, says everybody should have to pay for health care. Alex in Toma doesn't like that the law was upheld. Stephen Madison is happy. He says people shouldn't go bankrupt because of medical costs. Thank you for listening, and thanks for all your reactions on this health care hour. More on healthcare coming up next hour in our Week in Review. Also Tuesday from 7 to 7:30, Joy Cardine will be back. We'll have a former Wisconsin Department of Health Services Secretary Karen Timberlake on the program. We have an invitation out to Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen, who participated in the challenge to the law. We've invited him to join for the second half hour. We'll keep you posted on that. Thanks to Bill Martins for doing a bang-up job bringing all these guests on the air this hour. Thanks to Amanda Magnus for direction this hour. And Naya Mukherjee, she's answering the phones, getting those guests on the line. Thanks to you for your calls, your emails, your Facebook posts, and for listening. I'm Rob Ferret. I'm filling in for Joy Cardine this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.